Hello, I'm Colin Baker. You lucky people are listening to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, the best podcast on the pod.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 456. I'm Adam, an ungrateful wretch, and here's Robert Haynes.
Look, I'm finding all this a bit disturbing. Cybermen, now Daleks, time travel in an organ.
Kirby Bartlett-Sloan.
I am known as the Doctor.
Mary Lang.
Well, Robert took part of mine, because mine is time travel in an organ.
And he's back. It's Ian Bissett.
And I didn't prepare a quote.
I don't remember that being
in it. Destroy her at once.
Oh, we could do it.
Oh, hang on. I got the voice for that.
Go on then.
Destroy her. Destroy her at once. There you go. Thank you.
Yes. Now you just will become as we are.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Oh, we're going to have fun with this, aren't we?
Yes.
All right, then. Yes. Okay, so I hope Mrs. Melrose will let us know when her computer has rebooted. Lillian Robin says, hello.
Is she a PC user or a Mac user?
I'm not answering that question because you're goading, Kirby.
Oh, she is a Mac user.
It's not a bad ratio, Kirby, in 8 years of Debbie being on the show, that only once has she been in a position where she needs to reboot a computer, whereas for you, it's twice per episode a lot of the time. So
that was back in the days when my internet connection was...
Oh, it was the internet connection. Right, okay.
Anyway, the internet.
Lillian Robin says hello, and Terry Marr says, good evening, 20 megabyters.
Hello, Lillian and Terry.
Yeah. Good
day. Get me comfy in my chair. This evening, this, whenever you're listening to this, we're going to be reviewing Attack of the Cybermen.
Again.
Shall I play fake crowd
Some
music?
What's
wrong with that? It's a Doctor Who story. Now, there was a bit of a clue in the title. There were going to be Cybermen in it.
Really?
Just saying.
Really?
Yeah. So even though Mrs. Melrose is lagging, a bit like her own internet, funny enough... we can get started with the Attack of the Cybermen. Oh, look, I've accidentally got the sound up. I'll turn it down.
Ooh.
So we move on to 45-minute episodes instead of the 23-ish episodes.
What do we all think about that?
I like it.
It's novel, but at least it was on Saturday evenings.
This time they're showing every Saturday evening, yeah. Mm.
I wasn't quite sure about the Attack of the Cybermen header being in capitals. They're really shouting that headline, that sort of title at you, aren't they?
The funny thing is this was our setup for what was to come. And at the time I thought, this isn't Doctor Who, because back in New Zealand we got it every night except Friday night. So we had it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Mm-hmm. And so it was like to have this, no, actually they spliced it all up, I think, in New Zealand. And remade it into
I have heard that. Then there were some awful, very odd cliffhangers.
Yeah, I read about that. That they did. They cut distribution. They did cut it into four parts.
Yeah.
I've got to try now. Debbie says I've got to try now. We haven't even got it for us the title sequence yet. This is almost like having Kirby on the show. Laurie Nick says hello all. Nice to hear you. And then Debbie said having to need the gallery music to play while we're waiting for her. Thing to reboot. Right, there we go.
Oh, it's Laurie. It's Jeff's girlfriend.
Indeed. We were trying to keep that one quiet. That's out the bag now. Well done.
Hello, my name is Sophie Aldred, and you, yes you, are listening to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Anyway, let's get back to where I was.
I need to add a
Mary,
new column?
Mary suggested we had a feud going on because you disappeared the moment I came on.
I was just about to introduce Ian and Debbie, and then the big suggestion was that there was a big feud going on. So anyway, Ian, Debbie, Ian.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm not talking to Debbie.
No, I don't blame you.
We've got a big feud going on. I'm surprised nobody mentioned it.
Should I add a new column in the database for Ian?
If you so wish to, but well, can we actually get on with the show? For sake.
We're doing a show.
Well, right, I know Ian was on last time, but it was kind of a surprise to all of us. Yes. Now that he's becoming a semi-regular, can we know more about him, like where he lives, so that we know, is he part of
what's your address, Ian?
With my ass. Burlington, New Zealand.
Covered under the stairs. oh, sorry, that's Harry. I'm actually I'm a New Zealander, but I'm living in Florida,
where it's raining. So.
Yeah, because
where it was raining earlier.
That did confuse me because I knew you were from New Zealand, but you kept talking about Florida. So I'm thinking, really? Yeah,
how come you don't say fush and chups?
Fush and chups.
Well, I do. It's just in well, you see, fish and chips. Alan's here in the chat. He just tried a new place that he just went to.
Oh, he's been to another new place again, hasn't he? Yes.
The new same old place he goes to every time. Yes.
Well, so it was award winning, so I can see why he went.
Anyway, 15 minutes.
Notice how I divert to somebody else.
15 minutes of the live feed. We haven't even started yet. I'm going to get into trouble. Anyway,
no, blame it on me. That's fine.
Oh, yeah, it's going
to
work. Isn't it?
Well, I want to know what moved him to Florida from New Zealand. That's quite a move.
Oh, go on then, quickly. Kirby on the show.
Way back in the midst of time, before we could do things like this, where we could all talk at once and see a guy podcasting in his front room live on the internet, I met a girl online where all you could do was text chat. I was in New Zealand. She was in Minnesota. I moved here, married her, and then her parents moved to Florida, and so we followed. So there you go.
That sounds quite
romantic. That's the shortest rendition I think I've ever done.
Right then, back to the show then. All right then, so
I'm not judging you, Lillian.
Laurie Nick says, right, the love that dare not speak its name. Lillian Robbins says, great podcasting. It's quite rightly so. I'm going to give her a ding for that. No, she's being particularly sarcastic. We'll give her a ding anyway.
It's honest podcasting. I think that's the difference.
And Lillian Robbins says, Ian doesn't have an accent. I'm talking about that. I think it's a lot of hyphenation and stuff like that. One of those little strange hats you have over your letters. And Saints of Just God, get in!
Oh, for God's sake, Adam, stop watching.
Get in!
Doctor Who's more important.
No, it's not.
I love how we get razzed for diverting it off into.
Hang on, I'm just going to watch the goal for a second.
And all of a sudden, there's a football cheer.
Oh, Giants! Jay Adams has scored.
I've had the episode going for 5 minutes now, and we haven't spoken about it at all.
Hey, but we scored.
Anyway, right, back to Doctor Who. Right, so we just about... we're going to have to do the official introduction. And Debbie Melrose.
He's allergic to nylon.
Well done for not picking one of the ones we used.
Yeah, yes, I was about to say, I used that one. No, I didn't.
That's rare.
Just for anybody who is watching the podcast and not the football, it's Southampton 1, Manchester City 0 at the present time. and Shay Adams has just scored his first goal for Saints. I'm out of breath now. Anyway, right then. So, Paula Moore wrote this particular tale of attacking in Cybermen.
No, she didn't.
We start the story with some workmen.
Oh, you're going to ignore us, huh?
Well, lovely Paula Woolsey.
It just says Paula Moore, so I just said, stop being horrible to me. I'll set Debbie onto you.
What? Yeah, it's Eric Sayward with a lot of input from Ian Levine for all of the continuity stuff. The somewhat annoying continuity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Splendid.
What's wrong with this story, to be honest?
Where did I get up to? Oh, yes, we haven't started yet. Right,
yeah, some chaps are,
continuity when it's convenient and not when it's not.
Mooching around the what do you call it, sewers? Is it the sewers? I don't know.
Yes,
it's the sewers. And there's the first continuity thing.
Oh,
it's the sewers under Fleet Street.
Invasion.
Which is, No. Invasion's not under Fleet Street. This is a...
In the sewers, though, Kirby.
Yeah, but this is the sewers under Fleet Street are from Talon's Wing Chiang.
Okay, thank you for that. The point
there
that Robert
is giant rat down there.
The point that Robert's trying to make is the fact that the last time, well, when we had the Cybermen in the invasion, they were in the sewers, so they sort of got the similar idea. Can I pull my glasses up my nose a bit before? I could do it in a friendly way by using that finger, not the other one. Back to Doctor Who. Right, so these gentlemen are poking around the... oh, God, my sliders stopped working now. Hang on. The sewers. And then one of them disappears. And there's a scream and...
It should be a surprise who did it, because it's got it in the title.
Well, yeah. There is a clue. Anyway, and then we cut to the TARDIS console. My nose is starting to go into spasm, so I'm going to sneeze in a minute. So I do. Laurie Nick says, goal! Quite rightly so. And,
I like that.
And then Alice Pritchard says, Chipwicks of Worthing rules, and Laurie Nick says, nope, he doesn't have a FLA accent at all. FLA.
She doesn't ever think I have a Florida accent either, which, thank goodness, I don't, because Florida's the South, y'all. I don't have my washing up. I don't have to put my washing up, you know.
So, oh, God. Back to the TARDIS in race. So the Doctor
There's two people on this podcast. Well, Matthew's not on a lot. But two of us are Southerners, and we don't have Southern accents.
Haven't
you? Just sound like Kirby, though.
I don't have a Yorkshire accent anymore.
Kirby lives in Georgia, and Matthew lives in Alabama.
Matthew was raised in Alabama, and he doesn't have an accent. He sounds like he's from New York.
I just recently, before the pandemic hit, did a production of Driving Miss Daisy, where I had to do an Atlanta Southern accent, and I actually got kudos for it from somebody from Atlanta.
You're talking about accents. So obviously, we have Nicola Bryant doing a terrible American accent. I was watching Desperate Housewives with Dougray Scott in it, doing the worst English accent I've ever heard, and he's Scottish, so he should be able to do an English accent. But he's really trying to channel Prince
like
Charles,
like David Tennant.
Anyway. I managed to actually get into the conversation and try and work the thing back to Attack of the Cybermen, which obviously you lot talking has allowed me to watch a Manchester City attack, which is currently building up.
See how nice we are.
David Silver has just dived to try and get himself a penalty. Oh, it's not David Silver. Oh, sorry, you're back to Dr. Anyway, right then. So
we're
in
still
the,
the sewers, or we've actually gone to the console room?
Well, if you'd allow me to speak.
In the console room.
Yes, we're in the console room, and it looks like VAR are going to give a penalty. Anyway, right then, so...
in the console room? It's offside.
Terry Miles says, where's the kettle? And Lauren says you, Kirby. Right then. 2 minutes into the actual story itself, and where are we? 21 minutes into the show, minus edits.
You can show how enthralling this one was, then.
I'm loving your running joke, Terry.
Right then, so the Doctor is trying to fix the chameleon circuit for some reason, and Perry is being exceptionally irritating and disrespectful.
She is, isn't she?
To the Doctor.
Oh, but she's being very pink.
Yeah, it's a nice outfit.
That doesn't excuse her manners.
It's a nice outfit, and her hair looks nice.
No, it's a horrible outfit, and it's ridiculous. And it's one of the worst things about this story, but we'll talk about it later.
I agree about the color.
Story.
I agree about the color. I don't necessarily agree about the outfit not being particularly.
Oh, 18-year-old me is well up in there with you.
God, Man City are attacking again. They just missed. Right.
Master.
Oh, what?
He's watching football, Kirby. Give him a moment.
I've got something to do now while you're gabbling on, yes?
Master, you notice that J&T still needed to bring in a sonic screwdriver substitute.
Yeah, that was a bit pathetic, to be fair.
Sonic Lance, yes.
But it didn't laugh long. It lasted long.
Lancing a boil.
Yeah.
I have got one of them sonic lances. It came with the Sixth Doctor figure, the character options figure. The little sonic lance. Can we get back to the story? So,
Perry depends up the scorers.
Perry is implying the Doctor's still not quite recovered from his regeneration.
He's definitely a bit cross about things, isn't he?
Well, if you had some young girl nagging you,
unstable.
Way she's...
You have two young daughters.
Yeah, exactly. You'd get a bit ratty, wouldn't you? So anyway, the camera switches to the right and they all fall over and grab onto the console and the camera wobbles around. And here we go. Yes.
There's a great bit, though, where they have that string tied to that apple.
But it was so deliberate, wasn't it? The way she put it on the console and you knew that something was going to happen to that apple.
Yeah.
Apparently, Debbie, something happened to your apple, and Kirby was absolutely thrilled to bits.
Oh, I bet. That,
yeah.
It was my own fault.
The right show.
Something. That's all. Nothing wrong with my apple. Thank you very much.
That's what she said. Anyway, right then. So back to Doctor Who.
I gave you that one.
An old Ford car rolls up, and Davros has forgotten to put his costume on. It's almost like a naked Davros in this particular scene. And in the car also.
I had forgotten that Terry Molloy was in this until we watched this again.
Really? You forgot, did you?
Well, yeah, because the last time we went through all these, we're not watching them in order. I'd never seen him as Davros at the time that we saw this and discussed it. And then since then, I've met him, so...
Name dropper. Anyway, right, so in the car also is Lytton, who obviously we saw previously in Resurrection of the Daleks. Stuff coming through on the feed. Robert Vence Jr. says, "Hi, everyone, I thought I'd drop in before late lunch." It's his fault that Ian's on the show, just like I forgot to mention that last time. And Laurie Nick says, yeah. "Ick, I remember those hot pink spandex tops and make you fat looking shorts from high school."
Yes.
There may have been a top like that in my wardrobe in a less noxious colour in those days. Yuck. Yes.
Great. Now I think one of the dogs wants to come in. There. He's going to want to see a photo of that.
No, none of the dogs want to come in. I got that bit wrong.
So, yeah, watch out for Jeff.
Watch out for Jeff. What's up, so, of course, we're immediately led to believe that Lytton's up to no good because he was up to no good in the previous time he was in the show. And, of course, the other well-known actor that's in this particular scene is
Brian Glover.
Northern bloke. Brian Glover, is it?
Brian Glover!
Who I remember was in Kes.
Yes, I love Brian Glover.
He was
always point out, he used to be a wrestler.
Yes, but he was in a lot of British productions up to this point. And also, he was a wrestler as well, a professional wrestler.
I didn't know that.
Didn't you?
You didn't know that?
Yes, I did. Of course I did. They always say it.
Oh, here we go. It's not unlike you to be sarcastic, Timmy. Robert Vence Jr. says, "Music for the story was a little off, like Laurie said." There we go.
Well, what I read is that
I thought
they just used a lot of segments of old music from other episodes. That there was no real original music to this.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, so we're going to cut back to the TARDIS console room.
I believe Laurie wanted Mary to put lyrics to that. Little tune.
What, the do-do-do-do bit? Same tune again, same tune again, same tune again. Right,
down
so...
down the street, looking menacing to police.
Out there on CBS Records.
That's better lyrics, so I'll stick with Ian's version. Right, so back to the TARDIS console room with more bickering between the Doctor and Perry and a nice camera angle on Perry's cleavage. That has to be mentioned. And then...
You don't miss a beat, do you?
So Lytton and his cronies find a way down into the sewers, I suppose. And then this bizarre scene where the Doctor shows Perry Halley's Comet. And it's the worst sort of graphic of a comet I've ever seen, to be fair. It's just sort of like a black...
They did try to use like background. An actual image of it. I did wonder at one point.
But everybody knows the comet.
It was a really big thing, Halley's Comet, all around that era.
Everybody knows that the comet doesn't actually have a tail until it's near the sun. So that was just...
Right. And the other odd thing is that they spent a lot of money on that graphic.
That's really? Even funnier.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Anyway, so
it's kind of like... Kind of like the previous story when they spent all that money on that damn suit that wouldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
That's right,
So, anyway, they're still bickering and the villains are still sort of, you know, going villaining. Into
villaining.
The...
Villaining.
Villaining, that's a good word.
General villaining going on.
Then alarm. Alarm goes off on the TARDIS console, and Perry says, oh, there's an alarm on the TARDIS console. So they follow the... obviously, it's a distress signal, isn't it? They like distress signals in the TARDIS console room. It just gives them a reason to land where the trouble is.
It's a distress signal that goes through time somehow.
The Doctor, meanwhile, is moaning and grumbling about the police box. So he's he obviously fiddles with the chameleon circuit, and when it materialises in Totter's yard, in a certain scrapyard,
doesn't look anything like it.
Doesn't look like the same when another time it lands in it. But so that iconic picture of when he pokes his sort of head out the TARDIS door, I think Alistair painted that.
Yeah, with this.
That
yeah,
particular
the
thing
lands.
For one of the book covers.
I mean, they.
I think the idea that they go back to Totter's Lane, but they could have made it look. They could have made the same sign, because they do make the same sign with a misspelling in a couple more years.
Yes.
Get it wrong, yeah.
But here you go. Here's the logic of the story. We're going to do all this. This
continuity.
Continuity stuff and fill it full of Doctor Who goodness. And
forget about the story.
A guy who is
forget
a guy who played a Cyberman in a story that nobody's seen in a hell of a long time. We're gonna stick him in a suit and you can't tell who he is.
Yeah.
But any old scrapyard will do for where it all started.
Sort of where John Nathan Turner started to lose the plot.
You couldn't tell who he was because his voice. They completely changed the way they did the Cyberman voices since Tomb of the Cybermen.
Yeah.
So anyway, the TARDIS has materialized, and
he did sound unusually like the robot, the giant robot.
The K1 robot.
Yeah. So it materializes and then changes into an organ when
that's what she said.
When they walk away from it.
Mm.
Did I hear a snort and a snicker then?
Well deserved, thank you.
Master.
Yes, yes, dear.
It was.
Master.
Yes, dear.
You've already skipped all the way to where it's an organ, because it starts out as some sort of
wardrobe, wasn't it? Sorry.
Wardrobe.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it wouldn't stop on that scene, so I forgot. So it's a wardrobe, but it does change to an organ. Thank you, Kirby. So as the Doctor can play a little tune on it.
Does it work the second time round?
Thank you for the. Debbie gets a ding for spotting that innuendo. Well played.
I do like the
and
way
whose
that,
end?
I do like the way that as the Doctor and Perry are marching up and down these back alleys, Perry keeps jumping up and down, trying to sort of going, look at me, I'm trying to talk to you.
Mm. Yes, that's all right. Robert Wentz Jr. says, too. I don't know if I'm too crazy for the 45-minute format. And Andy Nunny says, where would the entrance to... Oh, to the organ be?
He finished
the sentence in a second. But round the back, apparently.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
You have to bend down, though.
Anyway, the Doctor...
He's
up and down the lanes with his little gadget trying to find this homing signal while being nagged by Perry. You know, I would have got heaved Perry on this story if she weren't so blooming nice looking. Oh, she'd be gone. I wouldn't be able to put up with this, the nagging and moaning that she is putting the Doctor through at this stage. He can't get away from her. Wherever he runs, she's after him. I mean, when I was a bit younger, women, we used to call women in a rather derogatory way, totty. And the reason they were called totty is because they'd hear this tot, 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 tot noise with their shoes. Just saying. And then two policemen just sort of rather sinisterly stand in one of the lanes, sort of with their arms behind their back.
Policemen,
yes.
Even though they don't have that as large a role in this story, those are the same two actors who played the policemen at the end of the Daleks.
Yes, I did notice that. Thank you for that.
I don't think anybody
Kirby,
would have noticed, really, though, to tell you the truth.
Didn't really matter, but yes, I did notice that. Andy Nunny says, evening, Dean. And back to the story. So, so these policemen obviously are now watching the Doctor. The Doctor eventually finds where the signal's coming from. And then leads we see the villains sort of skulking around the...
sewers.
What would you call it? Sewers. But obviously one of them's about to die, because that usually happens in these situations. The doctor happens upon the sign that says I M Foreman 76 Totters Lane and looks all sort of
gooey. Misty-eyed.
Yeah, gooey over. And that's the scene that Kirby's talking about, in which Perry jumps up and down in front of him to get his attention, like a spoilt child.
He's doing that all over the place, though.
Mm. And you're right, it was almost like a giant cabinet that looked a bit like half of a grandfather clock, but painted white with flowers on.
French wizard.
That's the TARDIS, by the way. The Doctor struggles to find the entrance, but like we said, round the back. And there's a scene in which he has to put up with a bit more nagging in the TARDIS while the policemen approach. And then, oh yeah, one of the men in the underground gets done by some strange camera graphics that were probably outdated for Top of the Pops in those days, to be fair. Yeah. The TARDIS changes into the organ. And I'm going to play the bit that I do actually like this particular bit.
I'm not saying a word.
I'm certain I'd fixed it.
And then you have the actual backdrop music playing.
Nice version by Sky over there.
What?
Nice version by Sky.
By Sky?
Up to Carter.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, okay. There's another...
And people always keep saying it's the Toccata and Fugue. No, that's just the Toccata. It's not the Fugue. We haven't gotten to the Fugue yet.
Okay. Anyway, so there's another good scene in which the Doctor looks like he's going to fall down the pit, but steps over it instead, because that makes Perry go, Doc! Mm-hmm. And I quite understand the Doctor's glee in winding up Perry during these scenes, because, like I said, it's been annoying.
She's easy to wind up as well.
Yeah. Anyway, then a policeman appears from the pit, pointing the gun at the Doctor's crotch, but the Doctor deals with him in comedic fashion by pushing him, kicking his gun away, and pushing him on the head. What?
As one would.
Yeah. And then
deal with him in comedic fashion.
Yes.
Fair enough.
And then another great part of that scene is when the police helmet comes up from the pit, and Perry thinks it's the surviving policeman, but of course it's the Doctor wearing the helmet. And there's also a little scene of the other policeman gloating in his face when he smiles, and he thinks his mate's coming up, but he isn't.
If I'm going to be assaulted by somebody, I think I want to be assaulted by somebody in comedic fashion. Like, that's a hell of a lot more fun in this game. Like,
but Man City nearly scored. Like,
would you do me in comedic fashion, please? Because just had a lousy day and I get to use a laugh.
Well, sadly, all we ever do things is in comedic fashion, to be fair. You like that, don't you? Copyrighted before you say anything, Ian, that statement. Anyway, so they go. The all Doctor right. and Perry enter the.
It was Kirby came up with that one.
Dragon.
Master.
No, that was mine. Yes, Kirby.
Yeah. Before they go into the pit, Perry unscrews the silencer from the pistol because otherwise it doesn't fit in her pocket.
Ah. I didn't know she had
a
pocket.
I saw her unscrewing that. I wasn't sure why.
Is that a silencer in your pocket? Or are you pleased to see me?
That's what she said.
So anyway, they're still skulking around underground, and the Doctor and Perry are joining the skulk. And just moving forward a little bit. And
everyone's
then a Cyberman.
Skulking.
Some Cybermen turn up. In a quite atmospheric
black
way,
Cybermen.
Actually.
Isn't this the only time we see black Cybermen?
I don't know. Where's the black Cyberman?
In the sewers, and you also see it in a couple of scenes in the two different control rooms.
I never noticed that. I thought it was just shadowing.
No.
Because it was dark.
That's quite good, then. I like that.
Apparently the idea is that they're
different factions
hiding down in the sewers, so they're black.
Oh, you mean so they camouflage? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes.
Right. Kirby, racial diversity happened back then.
Yeah.
Well, actually, in this story, they had to fight against a couple of people for the lighting. The sewer area, because they wanted it lit a lot brighter than that, and they said, and then it's ridiculous.
Yes.
And you can see that. If they've got a black Cyberman, it's like, you've got to, you've got to take that, so, yeah.
But it is interesting, because obviously this scene is lit very darkly, and probably quite mm-hmm. rightly
so. It's and all a this, very good set.
Nowadays, it looks like a sewer. Everything's darkly lit. Anyway, the Doctor and Perry stumble across dead henchmen. Hang on. Almost stumble across him, they find him.
Waste of a good henchman.
Yeah. Lytton and Brian Glover. Is it Brian Glover?
Griffiths,
that's it. Get captured by the Cybermen. And of course, Lytton's trying to sort of say, well, I can help you, blah, blah, blah. A bit like the Master would, actually, funny. And then
I
we
thought you said you were from Fulham. I love Brian Glover. I reckon he was great in this.
He is great. Well, was. Obviously, he's no longer with us. Mm. And then we cut to, I think it's Telos, is it? The surface of Telos, yet another quarry.
But so it's a quarry we've used many, many times.
I thought you might say that. I was dreading the possibility. Just the mere mention of a quarry.
It was Telos way back in Tomb of the Cybermen.
But they actually kept continuity of the... that bit, but they didn't keep the continuity of
Sutter's Lane.
So they might as well have just watched this scene in black and white.
Or
then.
Anything really important, yeah.
And this was also, it's the same quarry that was the surface of Draconda.
Thank you for that, Kirby. It gave me a few moments to watch a bit of the football. So during the... scene, we meet a couple of characters who reminded me of the skinheads from the late 70s and early 80s, especially Loudmouth, whatever his name was. He's a bit snarly, a bit like a thug, and he's a bit not a very nice character at all. But
around with him if all he does is shout at you?
His plan is to knock off a Cyberman's head, and also we see one of the traditional Doctor Who stunt men. For one that probably could be the last time. I don't know if he's in any more stories. He's in a lot of Doctor Who between 1969 and 1980, whatever this is, 6, 5.
Gary Walsh?
Four. No. I don't know what his name is. It's not Walsh, no. I can't, but it's one of the...
Stuart regular. Fell?
No, it's not Stuart Fell. He's no longer in it.
It's Pat Foreman.
Is it? No, thank you there, Kirby. Get a ding for that. For being helpful for a change. Anyway, so the plan is
for
to,
a change.
Rather ridiculous plan, has to be said, is to knock off a Cyberman's head because it's that easy now. At least there's no mention of gold
just
in this story.
Taped on the tape as well.
I must admit, these Cybermen do die rather grimly quite a lot.
Just a bit.
Obviously, they discovered that they could do a scene and knock off a Cyberman's head.
This is his very last appearance in Doctor Who. You're correct.
Thank you.
He's been in a long time.
Do I get a ding?
You should grab a ding.
Yeah. Yay! Ian Kirk says Perry is back. I nearly got Ian's statement out.
Wow.
Ian Kirk says Perry is back in 1985, but does not try to phone her mother. Typical. And Terry Marr says Black Cyberman is the Cyber Scout. Wow, that's interesting too. Everybody's contributing well this evening. I'm going to wear my finger out if I do too many dings. Anyway, like I say, the plan is to knock off the Cyberman's head. And then masquerade as a Cyberman, because these gentlemen in the quarry, on Telos, have sort of been, they've attempted to turn them into Cybermen, but their conditioning has failed, so they've turned into angry yobs instead.
Can I ask something? What are they supposed to be doing in that quarry?
Working. You men work.
At doing what? Digging up the ground for what?
Just making quarries for Doctor Who episodes.
Yeah.
Robert, it's a science fiction fantasy TV program. Yeah.
Okay.
They work. A bit like the people in the poor people in Destiny of the Daleks. What was their job? Just carrying boulders from one from A to B. in a way that's like they're really having fun, and instead of dying like you would do, just easing yourself onto the floor and lying down gently. Anyway, so the Doctor and Perry get rounded up by Davros. Sorry, I can't remember the actual character's name. It's Terry Molloy, anyway.
Russell.
And
Russell.
Oh, is it Russell? Dear, sorry. Russell. I dropped my tea too quickly.
Russell.
Who's eating sweeties?
You shouldn't have done that.
Are they?
Who did that?
They're rustling for you, Russell.
Oh, yeah, very Russell. Good. I'll give you that one. Well done.
Thank you.
That was good. I like it. Anyway, so the yobs attempt at sabotaging or nicking a Cyberman becoming one fails initially. Eventually, the rather bizarre plan does actually, for some reason, I don't know what it was. Anyway, it does pay off. I'm moving forward a bit here now because Kirby's been holding us back. And then we meet the cyber controller. Who
the fat cyber controller.
I was trying to be polite in this day and age of PC-ness. The cyber controller, whose voice has changed somewhat, and yes, I didn't like the.
He's got a nice little paunch on him too.
These front plates were a bit rubbish. You could see them.
Upgraded.
They're not fitting very well, these costumes. Yeah, I was just saying the costumes don't fit too good. These front plates of these Cybermen, instead of looking like metal like they have done in the past, especially in Earthshock.
They just plant around like, that's just scrappy.
I mean, if you were a cosplayer, you'd be really disappointed with these costumes. Just saying.
Yeah. One thing that was unclear the first time I saw this, I don't like it, is that there are really two cyber control rooms. But it's not very clear that one is on Earth in the sewers and the other's on Telos.
We had that the other week with the lava cave, didn't we? You know, we weren't sure what...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, in American dramas, they just put a little caption, wouldn't they, to say where they are sometimes.
Well, even in Doctor Who
They do now, and maybe this is why.
Meanwhile, on Telos.
Yeah.
Back at the Earth control room in the sewers.
That's right.
Back in the sewers, meanwhile, the Doctor and Perry have their hands pressed up against the sewer wall. Hope they wash their hands or sanitize them afterwards. While they got frisked by Russell. So you'll remember his name now because of Debbie's little rustling sound.
All right,
Roberts. I can't see who's doing these noises until you speak, obviously.
You took points away. I was trying to find justice.
Hang on. I've got an interesting connection.
We've had mention of Yobbs. Yes.
We've had mention of Russell.
Yes.
Russell Yobbs, they made a forgettle, right? Somebody get the tea on.
I did forget to get the tumbleweed sound effect ready for this episode.
I'm trying not to get invited back, and it's not working.
You should get a ding.
Come on.
No, it's not getting a ding, otherwise Kirby will start competing with him.
I'm going to get a bell.
I bet you are.
Yeah. I don't have any things up here.
Anyway, Ian Kirk says, the slave workers are digging holes so the Cybermen can put the explosive in to destroy the surface of the planet for some poorly explained reason. Here we go.
I don't know why they didn't just ask the quarry people to...
So the Doctor easily overcomes Russell Russell does find that the, sonic laser thingy. Is it a sonic laser?
Lance,
that's it.
Sonic Lance, yes.
Original idea. Perry does a lot of gun waving in this story, I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
She seems to be very sort of...
They ought to take that Sonic Lance and maybe make it a screwdriver.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, is it? So the two Yobbs take their second attempt at hijacking a poor innocent Cyberman and... scooping out the innards of its head.
Ew.
You
know, so there doesn't seem to be a skull in them when the opens one up later.
Yeah.
And then,
like electronic.
We see another a scene in which we sort of like see a partially sort of Simonized person, which that reminded me a little bit of Revelation of the Daleks, which we haven't got to yet, but obviously that's a Dalek, not Simon. And meanwhile, the Doctor...
That's an
Russell,
Eric Saver theme, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The Doctor, Perry and Russell are hiding, and they see the Cyberman, and the Doctor goes, Cyberman? And...
Wait, there's Cybermen in this?
Yeah.
Really? No. I hadn't noticed.
And
we've missed him up till now.
The Doctor stabs poor innocent Cyberman in chest with sonic lance.
That was pretty good, actually.
Dead.
Yeah,
And there's another scene.
I guess their allergy to gold hasn't arisen yet.
No.
No, not yet.
Oh, no, they forgot about it for this story. Thank goodness.
They have an allergy to being stabbed in the chest with a sonic lance.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah. There's a scene in which Brian Glover gets his head squashed by a cricket glove Cyberman.
with a really neat sound effect that...
Yeah, and also it's the way he sort of rolls his eyes back in his head, which is quite amusing.
Yeah.
You missed a funny line in the sewers.
I did. Go on then, while I find the next bit to talk about.
And Brian Glover saying, you know, about how thick the wall is. He says, "How thick is it?" And Lytton says, "Less than you."
Very funny, Mr. Lytton.
That sounds like another insult, Mr. Lytton.
Yes.
So many good lines.
Lillian Robin says, "Ian, ding." There you go. You got one from Lillian. Ian. And Robert Haynes says, "Ding." Thanks, Robert.
Yay!
So the Doctor and Perry and Russell go into the TARDIS by eventually finding the entrance round the backside.
I guess Russell can't sneak around very much.
Oh dear!
And in the TARDIS, because the door's open. Yes, and guess what's inside the TARDIS
open in the backside.
Some Cybermen, and there's some dying, and there's some shooting and explosions, and
poor Russell.
Yeah. And then there's they're going to kill Perry, and she goes, "No."
Hey, notice though something with Russell? Is that he sort of like stood there to allow the Cybermen to hit him.
Yes.
Instead of running away, maybe, or...
Yes, he did do that. Maybe it was in the script.
There's another thing. He walks several steps before he dies because he has to lay on one of the lines that runs to the console.
Oh, very good. I didn't know that. Well done, Kirby. I suppose you can get one of these slight ones. There you go. The scene in which, they're going to, instead of the Doctor going, "Perry," they just say they were going to kill her and she screams. So, I thought.
Destroy her.
I thought Saints had scored another goal then, but it's half time and they're just showing a replay of the goal. Right then, so
they're
episode
pretty dumb
two.
Cybermen, though.
What?
They're pretty dumb Cybermen.
Oh, they
just
unusual,
listen to their cyber leader saying to destroy her at once. And they just hover their hand there to allow the Doctor to say, "No, don't do it."
Yeah, they don't destroy her the same way that Daleks never exterminate.
Yeah, but there's a written rule.
Yeah, everybody likes to announce what they're doing and then give it a few seconds before they're going to do it.
That's a written rule in Doctor Who. When the cliffhangers come in, you must pause.
"You will be destroyed at once, Doctor. Now put them in there."
Obviously, so part two begins with them not killing Perry because the Doctor says, "Wait," and I'm going to press some buttons on the console, which is going to show a deliberate countdown to the self-destruct that's never appeared before or since in the TARDIS console.
Actually, I think it's the egg timer.
Yeah. Yes. He was lying to them.
He was lying to them. You mean it wasn't a TARDIS?
No, it was the egg timer.
Did he say that?
Yeah. No.
Oh.
No, I thought I'd missed something. Oh, so you're trying to be funny?
They just took his word for it. We don't know what that timer was for, but they just took his word for it.
It was a timer.
Exactly. What I liked about that scene was that obviously it was counting down. The Doctor was still rabbiting on, even though they decided that they'd do a deal. And the countdown, you could hear that going off in the background, and they managed to stop it just in the nick of time. So the Yobs have finished scooping out the Cyberman head, and they set about their plan.
Later on, when the Doctor goes into the head of that one Cyberman to turn on the signal, he tells Perry, "Well, there's nothing in there. It's just all mechanical."
That's untrue.
I've got a clue now of what Mary's going to say about this story.
He was protecting Perry.
Oh.
Because he didn't want her to know that it was little guts and...
Oh, okay.
That's so like, "Oh, it's okay. It's just a couple of wires." Yeah.
We do see the inside of it in that scene, and it's all electronics.
Yeah.
Ruin that.
He didn't want you to know the truth, man.
So,
Chris, right, spoiling the story.
Oh, yeah, so they're basically, they've now got to go to, oh, God, what's the planet they got? It's not Telos. Is it Telos they've got to go to now?
Yes.
No, they've got to Telos, yeah.
It is Telos.
Where the Kryons, the Krayons, we've never
the
heard
Krayons
of.
The Krayons live on Telos.
I'm just moving forward a little bit here because you lot have been stopping.
How did a race of beings that need to be refrigerated evolve on Telos?
Precisely.
Well, maybe it was cold.
Make a lot of sense, does it?
Maybe they originally lived on the surface. You don't know what things were like before.
They might have lived at the North Pole or something like that.
Yeah.
What about the Ice Warriors?
You need to get on Telos Google and kind of look at the Telos history, man, before you start judging, because, you know, they started off on the surface, but then things got a little hot and they had to slowly kind of move underground and they became like the kings of refrigeration.
Yes, that's
like
an acceptable.
Every supermarket.
Acceptable
on.
Explanation. Science fiction, fancy TV show. Lee Anthony right. Davis is hello, Lee here. Hello, Lee. Right then, back to Doctor. I'm going to move forward a bit here.
Hello, Lee.
Hello,
the Doctor
there.
Sort of takes everybody to... Oh, yeah, there's... If I jump back here... so he's hatched a plan, but he hasn't told the Cybermen about the plan yet. They're basically prisoner, and they get... I love the way they arrive on Telos in this freezing cold environment, and they're doing the I'm freezing cold acting by just hugging themselves.
But can I tell you something? Do you remember Fort to Doomsday... When Peter Davison went outside into space, which is very, very cold.
Yes, yes.
And he seemed to exist there quite a bit.
That's because he's a Time Lord.
Yes, but this Doctor acts just the...
He's really cold. He says, I won't last half an hour in here.
And the funny thing is, it was very warm.
There's another scene.
Gallifreyans, when they are exposed to the vacuum of space, they've actually have this... condition their skin, it actually causes it to heat up and allows them to stay warm in the vacuum of space. Whereas when they're in a cold environment, you're out of luck. So next.
Thank you, Ian. That's what we need on this show.
I want to know what Harry knew to change clothes so that all of a sudden she's showing up, you know, head to toe in a...
Yeah, in a pickup.
Logical explanation.
I think they mentioned something about it, though.
Right then. Meanwhile... we've got there's a scene in which the Doctor's having a discussion with one of the Cybermen, and a fist comes through one of the doors and knocks off one of the Cybermen's head again. They really do need to sort out their heads.
They really are gunky, though. It's so much gunge when they
attack the Cybermen. Brain flying about.
And this is supposed to be the same tombs from the Tombs of the Cybermen. Of the Cybermen.
Okay.
And they got upgraded while they were in there by some.
I'm very surprised they weren't a bit more consistent. Obviously, he wanted to have the same cyber leader, but not the same similar scenes for the actual Tombs and stuff, which in Tomb of the Cybermen were quite brilliant, to be fair.
They didn't have film footage to look at because it had been wiped. All they had to go on for Tomb of the Cybermen was the LP recordings of the soundtrack.
But they had photos.
They had the photos,
Anyway.
And you notice that building they're in does kind of look like the entrance to the tomb.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Not to me at all. It just looks like a big barracks.
It doesn't look like it. I was like, we could be anywhere.
I'm gonna have to open up my jingles folder now.
It could be a scrapyard in London.
Right, so I'm finding my jingles folder because it seems that you lot are going to get rather pedantic soon, so I need to have a certain tune ready just in case. Right then, this is the point at which we discover that Lytton is working for the Kryons. He didn't have any pencils already. He didn't have any pencils available to him, so he decided to work with some Kryons instead.
Did you notice something about the movement of the Kryons?
Were they in a squiggly sort of formation?
I think they were directed by Rosalind de Winter, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
They were acting like the guys who were swimming underwater.
What was that?
Underwater Menace.
The end of that.
Yeah, that when that was very similar to that. The style
of the Zarbi. The Zarbi.
Oh god.
Yeah, very much like the Zarbi. Yeah.
I'm gonna scratch my ear while you lot.
Oh, right, we're talking about something relevant.
Lee Anthony Davis says Attack of the Cybermen is a story that connects with the 10th planet. It does indeed. And the other one that we were just talking about, Tomb of the Cybermen.
Other one.
Mondas is another planet that connects with...
Notice something else? There was another reference to Revenge of the Cybermen as well, with the Doctor getting massaged by the Cybermen. Did you notice that?
No.
No.
You have a look. A Cyberman grabs the Doctor's shoulders and starts giving him a massage. like in Revenge of the Cybermen.
Anyway, back to the story. Yes, we find out that the crayons are working with some pencils. I mean, for Lytton. Or no, Lytton's working for the crayons. Yes.
And we got you calling crayons.
I was trying to do a review in this story. What I'm actually ended up doing, I'm trying to skip forward to relieve me of the pain of having to talk about it or attempting to talk about it.
You were talking about the references to other shows. I was just
No, Robert. That is fine. I just want to carry on with this.
He's always grumpy, Robert. That's part of his persona.
How really, dare
he's
you?
A lovable, lovely, wonderful man. But how dare you? You wouldn't think it.
No.
So I am here, you know.
You are.
The Doctor gets lumped into a very cold room, rather conveniently full of explosives, and very creepy Faith Brown.
Yeah.
And
that was quite the cold suit.
Yeah. Perry ends up unconscious.
I was getting why she was thrown down in that suit.
Mm-hmm. Perry ends up unconscious, but gets looked up by some creepy ladies. And the thugs join. I think they join a couple of Lytton's. It might be Lytton and Glover, actually. Not Brian Glover.
Yeah,
He's still going.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I get this feeling that Faith Brown's crayon has got a bit of death wish. She's decided that she's going to just kill herself. You know,
happened to her before, hadn't it? That's why she got the great.
So she does got this plan. She wants a doctor.
She
to help.
Had enough of things. Yeah.
Blow everything up.
She's still working the frozen peas section, and it just went down. And she's never been the same since.
Meanwhile, the thugs tell Lytton and Brian Glover what they are in regards to sort of. Failed Cybermen. Part of this poor old Brian Glover gets his hand nearly crushed. He's been treated rather poorly in this story so far, and he's going to be treated even more poorly very shortly.
Oh yeah.
So Perry is for making friends with them. The Supreme Dalek. Sorry, the Cyber Controller is
Dalek.
The Fat Controller.
I'm being facetious.
The Fat Controller.
Is plotting. Oh god, let's move forward. Stuff going on. Blah 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 blah, blah 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 blah. So I did notice this explosive that was it getting up 15 degrees or something like that, and it
self ignites.
Yes.
Does that mean that they have the same measurements in Telos as they do on Earth?
The TARDIS, Robert, the TARDIS has a conversion circuit.
Fahrenheit
circuit.
Or centigrade as well.
The TARDIS has a conversion circuit as part of its the gift of the TARDIS. Do you not know anything about Doctor Who? That's why we could well understand what everybody's saying.
I know about that, but for the fact that she's saying, 15 now below.
That's part of that's part of the translation. They're just translating it for us so we can understand the temperatures. That's always been in Doctor Who.
15 above what?
Above zero, I think.
Zero what, though?
But they don't say degrees zero
centigrade.
What?
Zero cups of tea?
Zero Celsius.
Zero cups of tea.
Zero cups of tea.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Look, the thing is some of the lines are intended for you to understand, the rest are for the Doctor to understand.
Thank you, Ian.
Did the Doctor save the day?
I'll tell you what, Ian, you're far too intelligent for this show. You know that, don't you?
He didn't really save the day, though.
True.
Lee Anthony Davis says television presenter Sarah Green. Oh, she was one. Yes, I forgot that. Played one of the crayons.
She's a green crayon.
Crayons.
We're calling them crayons.
She was the green crayon.
Ah, nice one. I nearly pressed the ding button then.
They also were going to hire a woman who used to be a presenter on the ITV equivalent of
Blue Peter.
Coming live.
Blue Peter. But they decided not to.
Yeah, it was Magpie. Oh. Right then, so anyway, moving forward then, because God knows what we're doing with this story. It's ridiculous. Miss Slider stopped working again. Here we go. So moving forward, yeah, so Brian Grover gets killed.
He gets sacked
when he goes to open the thing, which is very Tomb of the Cybermen, isn't it?
Yes, one of the Cybermen gets blown up by some of that powder stuff. And it's funny, he's padding his arm because it's on fire, and then suddenly he's just
a pile of... I just bash it out with this gun. And then suddenly it explodes for some reason.
Then Lytton gets... because
like
he's
cars
the only,
falling down cliffs, they always explode.
Lytton's the only one that survives the ambush, so they decide that he's going to be turned into a Cyberman. Faith Brown's crayon puts her pencil in the box of
that was a good scene
powder,
actually,
and then she just waits for death because there's going to be a big bang.
She's happy, she's done what she wanted.
The Doctor finds
Disco death.
It's going to be a big bang. Which one's Sheldon?
I feel a bit sick now after that.
Foul for
Can we just not react to the bad ones?
No.
So the Doctor takes something out of the Cyberman's head that is needed, and of course there's no gunk or goo in it at this stage, just to sort of deteriorate the continuity scenario. And Faith Brown does one of the crayons does a ridiculous dying scene. She looks like she's been smoking too much. All this smoke comes out of her neck.
She's dancing in a top of the box video.
And this is an Eric Saward story you told me.
Yes.
Lots of death in Eric Saward stories, I noticed.
It was a Paula Moore story.
I got told off of that one, didn't I?
Paula Woolsey.
The Doctor now has realised that Lytton's not a baddie after all, but he was pretty bad in Resurrection of the Daleks, to be fair.
He didn't really see Lytton in Resurrection of the Daleks. He saw him in passing.
At all.
Yes, he did, Kirby.
They're arguing. Back. Oh, hang on.
He was taken by the he was taken by some people and he walked past Lytton, but they didn't actually meet and say,
so I turned it down. Blah, blah,
blah. He just walked past him.
Have you finished yet? Back to Doctor Who. Yeah, so he basically comes up and then he tries to release Lytton. Lytton gives the Doctor... Is it the Doctor gives Lytton something? What does he give him? Is it the Sonic Lance? I don't know. The Sonic Lance has been blown up now, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And then there's a big fight.
I'm not sure what he gave him. It was something to aid his escape.
I know what it was. It was a Sonic lipstick to give to Sarah Jane.
Sonic lipstick!
Yeah. And then there's a big battle that hits off and the Doctor kills a few Cybermen.
Everybody dies.
Yeah, everybody dies. And then there's a weirdly amusing fight between him and the slightly chunky cyber controller, which isn't as good as the previous time that cyber controller was on it when he was throwing Toberman around.
A dummy Toberman around.
Yeah.
The body count in this is just like it's insane. Just a Doctor and Perry that come out of this thing alive.
More or less, yeah.
It's like, Dorothy, we're not in Doctor Who anymore.
Yeah. Whoa.
Oh, my God, Man City, you're about to score. Oh, no, they didn't. That's right. Awesome. That's it. And, of course, the crux of this story is when they go back to the TARDIS and Telos blows up, the Doctor's sulking and a bit disappointed with himself because he misjudged Lytton. I am so relieved. I finally got to the end of that episode.
Oh.
I really did.
Well, it is an hour and a half
big
long.
Jar of
so is Nicola Bryant. She got to get out of those shoes.
Okay, yeah. Right. So, at this stage, I will now just say what I think about Attack of the Cybermen. It's okay. I did hear in the side of my ear, this side actually, to be fair, you lot, basically, not Ian, obviously, but some of you slating the slight inconsistencies that do happen, and the sort of Doctor Who being wrapped up in itself a little bit in some of the scenes that non-Doctor Who fans probably wouldn't pick up on. But as a story, it's okay. It was quite enjoyable. I wasn't bored watching it, to be fair. It's got some, you know, some actors that are no longer with us in it that were quite iconic. It was nice to see Terry Molloy's face for once in the story. It's not perfect. It's not awful. I enjoyed it more than Twin Dilemma, to be fair. I do quite like Twin Dilemma. So it was okay, but it's not amazing. I wouldn't say that I'd find this an embarrassing story to show to somebody who wasn't a Doctor Who fan, to be fair. They'd probably be really confused because they, you know, wouldn't know what Cybermen is. They wouldn't know the history of Doctor Who. I think it was okay. Nothing special. Nothing terrible. But I have a funny feeling that people are going to disagree with me. So, Ian, what did you think?
I had to review this for another podcast with a chirpy girl and some grumpy sog.
Go on,
which podcast would that be? Yeah, it's still fresh in my mind. You know what? It's this whole era from basically, I think Caves of Androzani on, where I really get the feeling that the people behind Doctor Who, the creative people, were really trying to push it to be closer to what it is now. You know, they were trying to get a bigger show and tell more of a story and, you know, do some more things. And it just, you know, the TV public was resistant. Budgets were resistant. There's some really neat things in this season onwards. Just that are really good, and I can kind of see what they're doing. But there's also a lot of the stuff that just, you know, the music. Music's so quintessentially 80s. It'd be really cool if somebody went in there and kind of did an homage.
Traditional scoring.
Did a nice job with it. And put the little thing at the bottom that says, you know, meanwhile, back on Telos.
I agree, yeah.
There are certain things like that, and I can see all the stuff they're trying to do, but again, it's this 80s TV format of get it done, get it in the can, get it on the telly, done.
Yeah.
Move on to the next thing. It's constantly churned. Something like that nowadays, I mean, yes, they've still got a tight schedule and everything, but a lot more care and attention goes into the making of a good show these days. And unfortunately, Doctor Who, nobody really cared about it at the time. But back to the story.
They were pushing it for syndication, too, so they were trying to bring in elements that they knew would appeal to, you know, American and other audiences.
Right. But I mean, you know, it's there's some really dark spots. I mean, the guys going through the whole B storyline in this with Briggs and Stratton. Sorry, Bates and Stratton. sorry, I keep thinking about lawnmowers in this story. I don't know why.
I've got one.
You've got a lawnmower?
I can't start my Cybermen this morning. What? That whole storyline was really kind of interesting. It's like, you know, what happens to Cybermen that don't quite make it? What happens if it fails? What do they do with those guys? They just kill them? No, they're still up, so they're using them as cheap labor. And that's kind of, and when you think about the idea of it, that's kind of interesting. And then it's like, well, they've forgotten the fact that, like, well, okay, you replace these guys' arms, now they get really strong arms. So, you know, so you kind of invest in that one, and then at the end, it's just, they're dead. That's it. It was all for nothing. And it's kind of a part of me's like, well, I feel a little bit robbed, but also part of me's like, good on you for getting me invested in a storyline that was never going to go anywhere. That's kind of cool as well. So there's, you know, there are gems within these 80s TV, you know, things that we thought, like last week, things that we originally thought were just a bit pants, you know. Mm-hmm. You can kind of see now with our modern eyes at least what the guys were trying to do.
Exactly.
And yeah, there's some really good elements in this, and trying to tie in some old Doctor Who stuff while fandom was kind of kicking off, because JNT was all about, you know, working the fandom and everything. So, you know, valiant effort, and not bad. We could have just done with a proper proper scrapyard, and I don't know, a cyber leader and lieutenant befitting this story.
Lieutenant.
That's my own. That's lieutenant. There you go. But we didn't have any excellent lines in this.
Yes, excellent.
Really, that does bug me. I didn't really kind of realize it until I was watching some of the extras on this. That really, in order to bring him back for this cameo, Banks and Harry got just sidelined. It's just like, well, you know, here they'd established this kind of this character setup of the cyber leader and the lieutenant, and
Lieutenant.
That was how our that's how our Cybermen were. And then for this story, that's gone, and we're replaced with, you know, with this guy. It's just, you know,
I think there was a cyber lieutenant in there, but it wasn't Mark Hardy.
They're pushed to the side.
The usual actor.
You know.
And they did offer Banks to be the controller.
Mm.
Oh, that's interesting. Anyway, are you done?
Yes, I am done. That's good. It's enough ranting for now. I could go on forever, and but people would start yelling and cursing.
Lee Anthony Davis says this is the only adventure where the TARDIS changes from its familiar police box to an organ. Is that correct? Yes, it is. And then he said 7 out of 10. Okay, Debbie, what did you think?
I agree with quite a lot of what you both said, because it felt modern. It felt like current Who. What they were trying to achieve, but it just didn't hit the mark for me, this one. Unfortunately, I just felt, I felt the cybers didn't quite ring true for me in this episode. They didn't seem as ruthless as the original Cybermen, and the pointing out that you will be, destroy them, they would have immediately been killed.
Well, that's interesting, Debbie, actually, because we talked about the thugs, didn't we? How ruthless they were. So some of the conditioning the thugs had actually had worked.
There's more Cybermen,
Because because that's why you called them thugs, because brutal, and that's the side of the Cybermen that obviously they want to keep in humanity. Just
they become pantomime sort of villains, don't they?
It was. I loved the scenes with the all the like the heads popping and all the liquid going everywhere. I thought that was they were trying. There seemed to be so much of the what would you say? Just it was so full of visual brilliance and angles, cameras, and the way they were doing the special effects. But it just didn't feel enough of a story behind it to G up the fact that they were using all these special effects, changing the TARDIS, you know, that sort of thing. And I watched it twice because I was like, I really want to like this one, because I watched it. I've been on lockdown. I've only gone back to work this week. And so I watched
that's
this.
Your excuse.
That's my excuse. And I just couldn't invest in it as much as I do normally with Who. I found that quite hard with last week. So obviously I wasn't on last week. I do apologise for that. But
your opinion of
my opinion of Twin Dilemma was, I think, very much a, well, let's hope it gets better from here on in, unfortunately for me.
Had you seen this before?
No. I had when it came out, but I didn't.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask.
The only thing I remember from this story when it first came out was the fact that TARDIS changed twice.
Oh.
That's all I can remember with clarity, him
changes
playing.
Just three times, if I may be pedantic.
Well, you
it's can. It's unusual for you.
Bob Kirby, yes. And I remember him playing. I remember distinctly watching him playing and Perry's pink outfit. I remember that. But I don't remember the story. So when the crowns came on, I was like, oh my God, the Crowns. And I'm like, yeah, I've met these guys before. Why don't I remember what meeting them for from the first time?
They weren't that memorable.
Before, if you see what I mean. And I was quite disappointed in myself, I must say, for not having remembered them. But because I remember children's TV, you know, Blue Peter was very invested in Doctor Who for so long. Mm-hmm. So we were always being given treats and behind the scenes. And then all the breakfast shows got in on it. And it was around this time. Obviously, Mary's mentioned that they were getting ready for syndication and things like that. It was around this time that I remember there was a huge push on Doctor Who for British kids. And we were all involved in it. It was Draw a Villain for Doctor Who, which kept going, yep. You know, unfortunately, to... to that awful episode.
Did you enter?
It's not that bad.
Did I ever enter? No, I did not. But I sent him a lot of milk bottle tops, so you know.
Right. But you could have gotten a Blue Peter badge.
I have. I've got a green Blue Peter badge.
Ooh. Kirby wants to see it.
I don't know where it is. I've been looking for it. I'm pretty damn sure this has got it.
What did you do to get it?
I had to describe how I would make our town more eco-friendly. It was a thing they did when we were about 12, I think, and I was still watching Blue Peter, and I got my Blue Peter badge for suggesting more bins and poop bins and things like that. It was around then that there weren't any, so...
What a line of conversation.
It's like the way you said it the first time. More bins and
poops. Sorry.
We got the bins in. We're going to have to leave it up to everybody else on the other one.
Is that it, Deb?
There we go. Job done. But I digress.
What a way to end.
Yeah, what a way to end. But I felt the music as well was very Blue Peter. That's what it reminded me of. And
really?
And they were obviously picking from previous stories and things. But I... 2.5, 3 out of 5 for me on this one, I think. I've watched it twice. I would watch it again, so that always means that it's number two. But mainly because Isla was intrigued as well, and just watching her watch it was good. Yeah, so,
did she like it?
She really does. She likes him very much, and she met him. So she's like, I've met him. He was nice. That sort of thing. And I'm like, well, this is the Doctor. And he had his coat behind him at FantasyCon. I'm like, yes, he did. This is him, you know. And very keen. But there you go.
Okay, thank you very much, Robert. What did you think?
Yeah, I remembered very little from when I first watched it. So I'd only seen it when the DVD came out in 2009 or 10, whenever it was. And I didn't really mind it too badly. Even the crayons I didn't mind. compared
to... I'll always be known as crayons now.
Yeah. I sort of didn't mind them as much now, I suppose. But I think at the time, though, I thought, they're pretty sad. They're like... wrapped in plastic and just the hand movements and all that rubbish, but yeah, I didn't mind them. I mean, they are a pretty silly sort of concept, really, assuming, as Kirby points out, they can only exist in a refrigerated environment. How do you get to that stage in your life?
Keep paying your electric bill.
Yeah, they'd have a big electric bill for a start. But and things like with continuity, if they're supposed to be the Telos Cybermen, well, they don't look like the Telos Cybermen, and they don't sound like them. But
they don't have to. They're time traveling Cybermen.
Not the ones in the tombs, though.
Right.
Ah, good point.
Yeah, why were the Harmony?
Because they look exactly like the ones in the tombs.
Yeah.
But I actually quite like all the Cybermen deaths in this. I like seeing the Cybermen get their heads chopped off. And if you think about it, the Brates and Stratton, they would...
Vroom, vroom.
They are virtually like Cybermen, the strength of the Cybermen.
Yeah.
So they can knock off other Cybermen.
No, heads. Yeah, actually, good point, Robert. You know well done.
And just like the one that, you know, comes out of the tomb and knocks that Cyberman's head off, you know, it, obviously in their spasms, they can do that kind of thing. So you know, they have that strength to do that. But it was pretty sad when you see one Cyberman that gets his head knocked off. You see the tape at the back of its head holding it on for that particular scene. But you can sort of gloss over that. And what other things? I think there maybe would have probably been a bit too much plotting going on. And I think – I wonder how the you know, regular public would have kept up with what was going on. And as we say about the confusion about, you know, there's two cyber control rooms, one's on Earth and one's on Telos. But it's hard to differentiate between the two. It's only now, as I sort of know the story quite well, that I can understand that. But I think it wouldn't help to just – I mean, it would help to just put a little, I don't know, saying Telos when before that scene kind of thing. Yeah, that kind of thing would help. And I loved all the green fluid going all over the place and, you know, the Cybermen getting stabbed and all that sort of stuff. I thought that was great. Love to see the Cybermen carnage.
Just wait, we get an acid bath next week.
Wow,
yeah. Getting a little dark in here, right?
Spoiling.
But yeah, probably too much plot. And one thing I will say in Eric Saber's defense, because he often gets a lot of stick for his violent sort of stories, in that when you have violence, it does harm other people. It does kill them. So, you know, he's only really showing what those kind of things rather than it, oh, we're having a jolly romp of an adventure here and everybody's fine. They, you know, they just got their arm knocked off or whatever. It's not like that. But one thing I will say is also the DVD in Australia of Attack of the Cybermen is rated M. All the other ones are rated PG for, you know, parental guidance. That's rated M for mature audiences. Oh. Same as Ambassadors of Death for some unknown reason. I don't know why.
That's
why.
Ambassadors of probably Death. For the blood on Litton's hands.
I know
for that. But what I'm saying is I don't know why Ambassadors of Death would be rated M as well.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
But yeah, I'd say just for that one scene, I mean, Cybermen is fantasy kind of stuff, so them exploding, etc., that's fantasy violence, that's PG kind of stuff. But, you know, when you're talking in – but mind you, if you think about it, if they were really to depict the Cybermen as they are, cybernetic people, cyborgs, people that are part human and augmented by cybernetic engineering, you would – as you see when we look inside the head, there would be organic material in there.
Yep.
Something that's probably highlighted a bit more in the modern series. But, you know, I don't know why they couldn't have sort of made it a bit, oh, well, this is more of an organic thing rather than you just have everything replaced by cybernetic parts. So. But, yeah, I quite enjoyed it. It gets better, I think, with more viewing.
Yeah,
because I sort of understand the plot a bit more, and you sort of understand that the cyber control ones on Telos and ones on Earth, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I enjoyed it second time round, definitely.
Oh, this is probably about fifth or sixth
and
time round.
As I said, I absolutely love Brian Glover and all his funny lines. Yeah. So.
You know, he used to be a wrestler.
Kirby.
But, yeah, he was a real highlight for me watching. And I'm glad also that Terry Molloy got to – have his face
yes,
viewed as well. I think that was good for him.
Thank you, Robin. Yes,
Robin.
Have we done Kirby yet?
No, you haven't.
All
this time, there's almost nothing for me to say.
Oh, yay!
Yay!
Okay.
Oh, what? Sorry?
Okay, so 7 years ago, I watched this for the first time, and it wasn't one of my favorites. It's still not one of my favorites, but as I've noticed as we're going through things in order,
yeah.
I liked it better this time around. There's garbage in it and unexplained things, but it's Doctor Who. It's not nearly as bad as I thought it was 7 years ago. I actually enjoyed it. I thought the cryons were kind of stupid.
Other than that... Was it the blue ones or the orange ones?
The grey one.
Was it the green ones with the like with the sort of metallic bits?
Sarah Green one.
Sarah Green.
Those damn skin tone ones.
So yeah, I enjoyed it a lot better 7 years later, and I will likely watch it again. It's not one of the ones I will never watch again. Like I vowed I would never watch Twin Dilemma again, and kind of had to.
But, did they tell you what next week's story is? It's Twin Dilemma.
We've got Vengeance on Varos next week.
Sure.
Anyway, so that's it. Real short because everyone else has made a lot of the points I was going to make. Oh, and by the way, I posted in the comment thread a picture of the tomb entrance and the Telos cyber controller entrance.
You did that very quickly too, Kirby, I must add.
Yeah, that's just
pretty impressive.
And to me, they're the same entrance.
Back here, and after that short interval, we come to the highlight of the review. I dread to think what you think of it, Mary.
Oh, this was just a mess. There's just so many different plots going on, and after watching the first episode, I did not want to watch the second episode. I was already so confused and bored. I was actually bored with the first episode. And I see when reading about the story that the British public agreed with me in that after all that publicity that Debbie was talking about, the first episode had an audience number of 8.9 million in England. Which was amazing, but then the second episode only pulled in...
What about Wales and Scotland?
The second episode only pulled in 7.2 million. So there was quite a drop-off in the audience from episode one to episode two.
Who listens to statistics?
And I can see why it's such a mess, because there's no real author to this script. It was a compilation of three people. Eric Saward wrote most of it, but he wasn't allowed to take any credit for that because the Writers Guild
did not
want the showrunner to also be the author of a story. But then he wrote it in conjunction with his one-time girlfriend, Paula, I don't remember her last name. Paula Woolsey, I think.
But she didn't end up writing it, though.
And then Ian Levine also had his hand in the script. So the three of them made such a mess of this. I think there were many, many rewrites. And one of the most drastic rewrites was that there was supposed to be a scene that took place inside Halley's Comet, where they were going to steer the comet towards Earth. But they decided that was going to be way out of the budget to try to do that one, too. So they had to rewrite. They had to write that out of there. So to me, the fact that it seems to veer off in so many different directions is a result of this mishmash of the writing. And another thing that kind of put me off, because I think of Doctor Who as being kind of family fair, appeals to, you know, 8-year-olds as well as, you know, 18-year-olds as well as mom and dad. This one is definitely going down the road of what Robert said, it was rated M, because there's a lot of violence in this. I did not appreciate the scenes of the hands getting crushed and, you know, the Cybermen getting their heads knocked off. That was, you know, OK. But I'm talking, too, about the body count. Everybody's shooting guns at everybody else, including the Doctor is shooting guns.
Only a Cyberman, though.
Well, he's still shooting. He works his way through these things, you know, using his brain, not using a weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that is like another sidestep away from what Doctor Who is centrally about, which is the using of your intelligence and what you have at hand, rather than going down the violent road. And I, too, was wondering, you know, how is it that these hibernating Cybermen on Telos looked exactly like the Cybermen, you know, of this much later time. And the only one little niggly thing is after those two guys that were partially converted as Cybermen those two. Once they reveal that, you know, the one guy, his arm is like cybernetic now.
Yeah.
Then when they're with the doctor and Perry running away and climbing things, I notice when they reach up with their reach up to the ladder, that both of them, you can see their flesh wrists in all its glory, as opposed to, you know, the cybernetic arms that they were supposed to have. To me, the confusion of the plots, the reuse of old music, and this attempt to do, to appease the fans with a whole bunch of continuity things that worked sometimes and some things that were just completely unexplainably not in continuity. To me, this was just a mess of a story that I'll probably never watch again. And I like Twin Galette much better than this.
Wow.
Oh, is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, thank you, Mary. Right then, so we have stuff coming through. Lee Anthony Davis said, right, I have to go now, and thanks for reading my comments out. Until next time, bye for now. Alan T. Butcher says, Telos was cooler. And Terry Miles says, I'm amazed Kirby didn't see the stagehand in the cauldron before Faith's death around about 1 hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, I know about it. I think I was researching pictures of the tomb at the time.
Oh,
we were discussing that.
Here you go. All right, now we can move into feedback.
I was distracted.
Nearly into feedback. Now I posted a request for feedback, and then Copycat Kirby posted a request for feedback.
Yeah, and I posted my request for feedback way before you did.
Oh no, you
didn't.
Yeah.
Fight, yes. Fight.
Adams is first.
Well, nobody responded to mine.
No.
Wait a second.
We'll go with Kirby's. On third is when I did, and you posted yours at yesterday at 4:46 in the morning. So, yes, I did post mine first.
Right. I haven't got a sound bite for na-na-na-na-na-na, but that's essentially what you're saying, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get on with it then.
Good reason, because his was up there first. I saw his right away.
Who cares? Right. Go on then. Or do you want me to do it? Ian Kirk says, what a magnificent...
Oh, no, I'll do it.
Go on, then.
Ian Kirk says, what a magnificent organ.
That's what she said.
and that's what Laurie Nix said. That's what I said. Robert, the return of Mr. Lydon, love this story. Robert Wentz Jr. says, LOL, even the TARDIS is confused. he also says, I will give a direct order to copy your coat so that Cyber Leader can have one. I have Ian say that in the cyber voice.
Which was that? Huh?
Okay, never mind. He also has a picture of Perry in her leotard. One coat is enough. And then his review is, as I expand this,
Kirby.
What?
That's what she said.
A voice.
What voice?
A different voice. Go on.
Why?
My review of Attack of the Cybermen.
I first got to say a little better than Twin Dilemma, but that's not saying much. The Kryons were an okay alien.
Crayons.
Wrapped in plastic and foil. We see for the first and last time the sonic lance is used. The doctor was working on the chameleon circuit, but should have left it alone.
Yes.
He undid it at the end. The doctor seems more violent and a lot of death in this one. This is the start of the 45-minute episodes instead of four-parter. It makes a two-part. Maurice Colburn's return as Lydon gave it a boost to an otherwise lackluster story and does not stand up to repeat viewing. Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
They're going to start.
Seems to be a rehash of Tomb, with the planet Telos and the Cybermen taking over the planet for refrigeration of the Cybermen. I never liked the bickering between the Doctor and Perry.
No.
To me, I think Perry complains too much for my liking.
Yeah.
It's great to come back to the junkyard from an unearthly child. I never understood why the Doctor would have misunderstood Lydon, for you never knew which side he was on. At the beginning, with the fake Diamond Ocean's 11 group simulation and the whole thing with the creepy cryons. 3 out of 5 rating.
Cryons.
The yellow one. That's the best. Laurie Nix says, ah, yes, the feel-good episode of the summer. This reminds me of New Who episodes. New Who! Where they toss in so many plot twists in 90 minutes that you need a scorecard.
Amen to that. Yeah.
Also, a little of the old ultra-violence goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of kind of like this one, but unsure. I don't mind the new shapes of the TARDIS at all. Could have been worse. Could have been a porta-potty. The music, however, can Mary find some lyrics for the Criminals theme?
Two policemen. Two policemen.
Terry Miles says, when it's not a police box, the TARDIS entrance is always at the back. Robert Lutz Jr. says there's always a back entrance. Tom Baker's doctor used it in his last story. Actually, you do see the back used sometimes. It's not supposed to be. Neil James says, Attack of the Cybermen. This has a great opening episode if we ignore the music. Lydon is back and he's got a new posse. I really enjoyed the scenes with the gang who are both gritty and funny. Lydon dishes out some fantastic insults, and the Diamond Heist is really interesting to start with. Even the TARDIS Chameleon Circuit stuff isn't too bad. I still don't warm to Doc Six, but Nicola Bryant makes their scenes bearable. I'm not entirely sure whether this is because I like her character or I've just got serious lockdown horn. Oh, hello, Pink Leotard. The sewer set looked good. Well, good if you like sewers, I guess. The London location work is fine, and the Telos stuff is wonderfully bleak. The guy who plays Bates seems to be going for a biggest shouter in award.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's just way too loud and over the top. Then we get a black Cyberman who looks awesome and, despite Russell dying from a very weak bonk on the head, very strong episode comes to an end. Sadly, the second episode is rubbish.
Yes, I agree.
Or is that Rubish? Remember Rubish?
Oh, yeah, Professor Rubish.
The cryons are annoying.
Cryons.
The Bates and Stratton storyline goes nowhere. Everyone dies and Perry gets put in a boiler suit. Last death is really nasty, as is Lydon's bloody hands. Then the doc says he misjudged Lydon. No, doc, you didn't. He literally tried to personally kill you in Resurrection of the Daleks.
Yep.
Half Doctor, part 1 gets a 4, part 2 gets a 2. So overall, 3 out of 5.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think he only misjudged Lydon for this story, not before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then my picture showing that I think those are the same buildings.
Well
and
done,
what did
Kirby.
Robert Lutz Jr. say?
As I said, a rehash.
Yes.
So is it fair to say that Bates and Stratton got mowed down? I mean, Biggs and Stratton?
And, you know, when whichever of them gets electrocuted at the end, when they finally make it to the spaceship that they can't fly because you need 4, but they only have 3. That was also Tomb of the Cybermen, the electrocution at the door thing.
Have you come to the end of the... excuse me.
Yes, I've come to the end.
Oh, you could have told me.
We were just talking on about things.
Grief.
I just did.
Well, eventually.
When you said, are you at the end? And he said, yes, I think that was the
you've gone on about
John
something else
Judas.
Then. All right then. So nothing else on the feed. We still got some viewers, so that's a good thing. So more feedback. What we got here then? Right. So Terry Miles says, hi everybody. Attack of the Cybermen was a new layout of 2x45-minute episodes. I feel it was for the American market, which the BBC was moving into. If you look for them, you can see points where ad breaks can be taken, a little cliffhanger here and there. 15 minutes of ads would have made a round hour for the program. Great to see Terry Malloy, Davros, out of his real chair, and once again his operative Lytton, Maurice Colburn. I realised Sarah Green, who played Cyron, I think that's supposed to say Cryon Vaan, from her voice. I didn't, to be fair. I'd forgotten, I'm moving on. But it was only Flast's rather large chest that made me think she was the comedian Faith Brown, indeed. On the subject of Flast, in the scene where Flast is taken out of the cell, in inverted commas, there is a stagehand sitting behind the pipework on the right-hand side of the screen in full view of the camera. I wonder if he is the same chap who was the hand holding the famous cushion in Pyramids of Mars.
He probably would. Yeah. Was.
The Cybermen were as ineffective as most Doctor Who villains. There were too many bosses. The Cyber Lieutenant, the Cyber Leader, the Cyber Controller. I feel sorry for poor...
The Cyber Stagehand.
For the poor extra... that had to stand in the conversion alcove for 45 minutes, for two 45-minute episodes. Hope he got a lot more than the normal extras for being in shot, not moving, blinking or breathing throughout. All in all, a great story. Sorry if you disagree. I like these type of Cybermen. It was a shame Lytton died, as he was an interesting storyline. In fact, the actor passed away not long after this anyway, didn't he?
Yeah. Cancer.
Here we go. So he
died, I think, before he was 50.
Had a heart attack, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. We also have this.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
Destroy her at once. Attack of the Cybermen by Paula Moore or somebody. We're back in the sewers. I think it's the first time since Tans and Wen Chiang. Foreshadowing the Moffat era, the episodes are 45 minutes long, and the second half is different. Here the TARDIS crew moves to Telos in part 2. The Doctor has prepared the chameleon circuit, and now has a magnificent organ. There are two men marooned on an alien planet, knocking the head off the Cyberman. Perry has started using that bleating quality in her voice. Mm-hmm. I like her outfit, though.
Yeah, so do I.
The Cybermen make her wear something more suitable. They also want to destroy the Earth. Is there no end to their villainy? Faith Brown was famous at the time.
She was.
She plays the Doctor's soulmate, Flast. Her face and voice are unrecognisable in this, so I don't know why they bothered. How does Lytton know that Bates and Stratton's companion was killed? I suppose the Cryons told him, off-screen.
Yes.
The Doctor kills two Cybermen. Some people say he does not do that kind of thing. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian, as ever.
Thank you, Ian.
All right, so we have a little bit more. But who? Who to send it to? Should we indeed send it to Mrs. Melrose, who couldn't be bothered to be on the show last week?
Yes,
I think we should do that. So,
you should send it to Ian next week if he joins us.
That would be quite interesting.
I will not be able to join you next week because it's our anniversary show on the Cult and Collective. We're turning 11.
See, that's the sort of excuse. That is the sort of excuse we need on this show. That's a professional excuse, not these namby-pamby excuses you get off Rhys Parton and Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Or and Debbie, who missed two
or
weeks.
Or Matthew.
Debbie doesn't make excuses. She just says, I'm not on.
Or just tries to avoid Skype altogether.
Curse is foiled again.
We were going to send the police round.
Well, you could join us the week after that.
Yes, I'll be back after that because I got so all to do then.
Oh, okay. That's right. Fair
Let's
enough.
See what that is. Oh, my goodness. That's Mark of the Ronnie, isn't it? Oh, boy.
Go on, Debbie. You have some words.
I do indeed. Cybermail pattern baldness and a paunch or no point cryon over spilt cyber fluids. Dear 20 Megabyters, Attack of the Cybermen is, of course, a closely studied contemplation on the folly of attempting to solve your current and future problems by relying too blindly on what happened in the past, failing to recognize when the circumstances are wholly different. Therefore, the frame here is the Cybermen trying to alter their own history, a well-established fool's errand within the show. Likewise, Bates and Stratton are seeking a time machine too. The Doctor makes a huge assumption about Lytton that he lives to regret, and Lytton therefore regretfully doesn't live to regret anything. The Cryons, however, have coolly accepted their situation. Nice. Ah, oh, that's good. And no, there is no way back. Their resolute action is the only way forward to at least put a stop to the cyber threat to others, of which they are already the victims. It should be a sobering tale to those that think winning the general election and the transformed political landscape of 2024 will be founded on trying to work out how the 2019 election might have been won. It should be noted that while some suggest that it is a very good story, they are simply out of their minds and being distracted by rather contentious production history, especially in terms of the writing and the back references in the script. The truth is that by furnishing Eric Saward with some historical perspective on the Cybermen, a certain advisor provoked an entertaining Doctor Who story from him whilst pretending to be Paula Moore, which was in fact the false name for one of the people who didn't write it. David is a very capable writer, but not a very natural Doctor Who writer, so this worked out okay. We also learn that Russell, the undercover police officer who infiltrated Lytton's bank job, was really a guy called Dave Ross with a complicated past. Or is that a complicated future? All in all, Attack of the Cybermen is a great story. Granted, it is a bit busy, but you really can't get bored. Okay, the Cybermen's plans seem a bit overcomplicated, but last time we saw them, they did spend time with the Master, so he may have rubbed off on them a bit. Colin Baker picks up where he was forced to leave off by the ending of the previous season, and once again we get an assured performance with depth and charisma. Yes. Still a little quick to anger on occasion, his Doctor is nevertheless settling down with some very empathetic and kindly notes emerging near the end. The Cybermen interactions here work well, and having both Blanks and Kilgariff returning to their previous cyber roles makes the Cybermen more compelling and more distinguishable from other cyborg races in sci-fi. The supporting cast all distinguish themselves, and their subplots are proficiently coordinated around the core of the narrative. Ryan Glover and Maurice Colburn deserve a special mention for ample and capable provision of light and shade. The story is perhaps two episodes too short, as given the number of plot elements, they could have been fleshed out. It could easily have sustained as long as The Invasion did and been an epic story. Next up, Doctor Who and the reality TV world, or Clara Oswald's granny, the early years. Those are my thoughts.
Well done, Debbie.
Can I add a mention about something?
No.
Oh, thank you, Alan.
That's about Michael Kilgariff. One thing that I did know, because I saw his performance in Tomb of the Cybermen, is he played the cyber controller in this in that same sort of stiff way. Like a robotic stiff way, if you actually notice it.
Yeah.
So I thought that was
he
good.
He did rather look like he had a bad back, didn't he, the way he was doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Bearing in mind we didn't really start the show proper until about 15 minutes late, that rather, unfortunately, I suppose, for you lot, means we have actually got time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
Aww. Aww.
I think I'll have to listen to that bit back, because I'm pretty sure I said cow. I'm not great at speaking at the best of times, but I'm pretty sure I did say cow. So, yes, I've lost my scorecard. Here it is. So I'm just getting slightly distracted by the Slamps and Man City game at the moment, which is still...
And Maurice Colburn was 49 when he died in 1989.
Everybody still has a joker. It's still the first to six, and we still have to rely on our little electronic friend to decide on the categories. Categories for which I have lost. What have they gone?
Yay! Yay!
Category's gone.
Just ask Mary. She's got it memorized.
Well, that's not the point. I had them in front of me. Somebody comes onto my desk, moves everything, and you know where everything is, and then suddenly I have to whisper a bit because I've just got a text off Isabella to say you're going to have to be a bit quiet because I think she heard the rumblings of rage coming from the bedroom. That's rude, isn't it?
Well, then maybe we haven't got time to do this. Maybe we should just do the sponsors.
No, I'm going to quiz. Quiz.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
You can't get out of it.
Right.
Quiz.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and Doctor Who news, we haven't done that.
Never mind that. Yeah. There's no news. I did check.
Hang
on, Man City are trying to score.
Oh, Earl Cameron died.
Sorry, distracted.
Tenth Planet. Actually, that links into today's story because
Earl
Cameron was in Tenth Planet.
What was A? Oh, sorry, yes, that does. But we'll talk about that later, Robert. At the moment, Manchester City are camped in Southampton's half and I'm a bit worried at this stage. oh, God, here comes another one. Ah, my God, get it out. Oh, my
yes,
God.
Yes, there he is, Doctor. Master.
Yes.
There is Doctor Who news.
Yeah, we'll do it later. How many times do I have to say?
Oh, you said there was none.
I was trying to get on with
sugar in their tea.
Adam, are you getting the hint that we don't want to do
two, please.
What do you mean you don't want to do the quiz? I've put... Come on,
milk
bro.
Milk or cream? Milk or cream?
Offside.
You get the feeling we don't want to do this quiz.
No, yeah. I like the quiz. I'm always
Oh, no, I've got a free kick on the edge of the area.
I'd like to see my daughter before she goes to sleep.
But Master keeps getting distracted by the football.
I know, but it's got to the crux of the game now. We're 1-0 up, and it's Man City have got a free kick right on the edge of the penalty area, which is rather foreboding to... Oh, God. All right, no bloody quiz this week. Right, that then. So this week's edition of You Won't Get This One was won by me.
Oh, that was fantastic. I hope people are going to that was the most difficult question that I've ever
I think I was dropped at the end, though.
You did?
Right, so remember, Kirby, put that down in your database. That was won by me.
I already did.
All right.
Right, so stuff's coming through.
I just typed in Adam won because of football.
De Bruyne has taken a free kick.
Oh, what's the score, though?
Adam, have you not got a teddy or something?
No.
Hide behind a pillow.
It might as well be a penalty kick. Hang on. This is the
nail biting podcast.
This is nail biting for me.
We don't want to hear what you sound like.
Get it out. Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's what she said.
I'm getting a bit fretty at the moment. Right then.
So shall we shut this one down?
What?
Is there anything on the feed?
Can you shut up? Right then. Where do we get up to? So we got... if Matthew is watching... This is Lily and Robin, by the way. If Matthew is watching, why isn't he on the podcast? Saints won!
And good night, man. Everybody. It's been a pleasure having you on our...
Adam's reenactment of the Seed from when Harry met Sally.
The trouble is, when I got out of my chair, it made me realise I need the toilet. Right there. Robin Wentz Jr. says, maybe Perry is supposed to be the way she is starting out. And change in the last story, but not the way people liked.
Yep. So we were just watching you. It's the delay.
Oh.
Just watch you run around the room.
Robert Vince Jr. says, we'll miss you, Ian. Congrats on your 11th anniversary of your show.
Thank you.
And then he says, congratulations to me. And then Debbie Melrose said, exciting football times, lol. And then Terry Miles says, 1-0, well done, Southampton. That's the sort of thing we should be getting posted
Is this Matthew watching the feed?
Is Matthew watching the feed? I have no idea.
He's having a feed.
I think Ian should take an opportunity here to promote his show a little bit.
Yes, I think that was a good segue.
Oh, yeah. That was an awesome segue. I barely even noticeable. I normally kind of can be found at a place called the Cultum Collective podcast. David Cooper and I have been doing it for almost 11 years now. Ooh. And... actually, we started before that, but that's a long story. But he does all the work. I just turn up and sound pretty or something like that. but yeah, you can find us on Facebook at the Cultum Collective, also on the internet, www.cultum.com. We are on all those podcasty platformy things, and Dave never shuts up about it and is fantastic and keeps me in line, which is why I'm here and yeah, not being kept in line by anyone.
Ah. just wait.
Laurie Nick says, I'll have what he's having.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Miss Sally.
it's tea, Laurie, with the tea bag tied to the handle, sweetie.
I do have an empty mug. There's my empty mug, which you'll see on delay in a few seconds' time. Right then, what else we got here? I suppose after you lot ruined the setup I did for the quiz, I should just remind myself by deducting points for next week. -1 for Mary. -1. Oh, you're not on, Ian. You're lucky. -1 for Robert.
What? -2
for Debbie, because it was her idea. And Kirby can stay on there. So I'll save that document.
Bug!
That'll remind me for next week.
I'm a thug.
Briggs and Stratton.
Okay, apparently there's some Doctor Who news. I really wanted to do the quiz. I was looking forward to it. Never mind.
Yeah, so was I.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
So was I, and I won't be here next week. Thanks, Your fault, Debbie. We blame you, Deb.
As mentioned...
No, I was just riding with the waves.
Earl Cameron has passed away at the age of 102.
Yeah, pretty good, eh?
No, he was in the 10th Planet. He played Glenn Williams, the American astronaut. I think he was an American astronaut, wasn't he, in that?
Speaking of Telos, yeah.
Yeah. He was quite good, I seem to remember. What else we got here? Doctor Who's Line Is It Anyway? The Doctor Who Community Improv Podcast, Doctor Who's Line Is It Anyway, has released a special episode to try and raise funds for the National Health Service through the NHS charitiestogether.co.uk page. Yeah, I gave him a shout out, and there's a little video of Sophie Aldred, who should be on the show, but sadly we can't get her on there because we can't actually review the book that they very kindly sent us to
Yes, you could. Book. You don't have to be the other podcast doesn't have to be the only podcast to review the book.
Yeah. Oh, I know that, but I don't know anything about it, so that would be quite difficult.
Adam, I emailed you the review twice now.
Well, I did. Have you?
Yes.
Yes.
To which email account?
I don't know. The one I have for you. So why don't you just send me through the email again and I'll get it done.
Oh, I'll have a look. I'll have a look. Thanks, Debbie.
There's nothing that says we can't do it.
Yeah, why can't we have it? She's done reviews on other people's shows.
Yeah, but I don't want to be in that embarrassing situation of not knowing anything about the book, that's all. Yeah, so What the Fans Think, Torchwood. Pencil Tip Publishing has announced the release of What the Fans Think, Torchwood.
Am I allowed to give you the book back yet, or are we not allowed to pass books to each other
yet? I don't
know
about that. I don't quite know what the rules are. I think you're allowed to disinfect things, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, how about I just buy you a copy and send it to your friends?
Oh, my copy. Doctor Who Magazine, issue 553, is also out, which can be bought, like Kirby usually says, at whoone.co.uk. In fact, you
is
can
that
get it in America
who
quicker if you order it.
That's
through...
my catchphrase.
What?
It's my catchphrase, Robert.
Ooh, they're going to fight.
Ooh, are you going to play that music
cat
again?
The music cat again.
Come on.
Yeah, so as I was trying to say, that you can order that in America or elsewhere in the world, whoone.co.uk will get you the magazine quicker than if you wait for it to arrive in the newsagents. And that's about it, really, because the other thing we talked about last week, which was the three doctors, Jodie Whittaker, David Tennant and Matt Smith, got together in some sort of Skype-type chat thingy. I think that's about it. No, nothing else. That's it, yep. That's it for Doctor Who news. Oh, I did say, I forgot to mention last week, I did post on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join, the fact that Lavazzi had a special offer on some of their products. I can't find the post now, but I'm pretty sure I did post it on there. But
we've got to scroll down a bit.
I'm scrolling. There we are. Is this it? Our friends at Lavazzi have a competition for you. Follow the link to enter the giveaway for the 7th Doctor's jumper.
Very slim cyber controller there. in that picture.
Indeed. Well, it's a very good cosplay going on in that picture, to be fair. All, well, obviously the jumper and that.
Young for the Seventh Doctor, though.
Seventh Doctor jumper. Well, probably the BBC probably wouldn't allow them to use such photographs. But, yeah, so if you go to the... I think it's blog.lavazzi.co.uk / Doctor Who contest. Then you, I think it's still running at the moment, and you enter that and you get a chance of winning a Seventh Doctor pullover.
Ooh, lovely.
Disappointed. I was really looking forward to doing to the
Master,
first. What?
Have you post? I saw that you posted it on TikTok. Have you posted a link to your argument with Alexa on the Facebook group?
No, because I need to watch the whole video.
Because that was so funny. I even showed my wife, who doesn't care about this podcast or Doctor Who.
I'll tell you what people are finding more funny on TikTok, not that particular clip. It's the clip with the chair falls on magic. That's getting even more blimmin' views. But okay, if I can find, where's my TikTok folder? I'll put it in there now, otherwise I'll forget. Oh, it's not loading, Kirby. Oh, dear, that's a shame, isn't it? Oh, it's loaded now.
So we get with a Mac.
Oh, it's not. I've opened up the wrong folder, Kirby. I've opened up the... This is top quality podcasting.
Do it after we're done.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, but I'll forget it. What's it called?
We're terrific. We're slick.
Yeah.
Is that the kettle?
Professional.
Oh, here we go. Alexa argument long. Is that the one you want? I'll put that in there. Then here we go. It'll probably be too long to upload, to be fair. Oh, no, it's one of your videos, isn't it? It'd be quite low resolution. Right, it's uploading for you now, Kirby. Is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, you've got a longer one than what was in TikTok.
I have indeed. That's what she said.
Oh, I missed it.
No, the one that's on TikTok is a shorter version because you've got a time limit on TikTok. I think it's a maximum of 60 seconds. Okay.
I didn't know that.
Well, you do now. Right, so I'm posting the 1 minute and 2 second clip now. And sorry to keep you up, Ian. I was intending to do a quiz on the show, but that sort of seemed to fall by the wayside. And I had the cards ready. I had the scoreboard ready.
I was ready.
And
traitor.
Next week, we're going to be discussing Vengeance on Varos, which features somebody who should have been at FantasyCon this year, Sheila Reid. But hopefully she'll be back next year. Can't promise anything. That's next week's show. I did actually map out, if we were able to do a show every week for the rest of the year, the classic era will be finished by the end of November.
Really? With that?
Wow.
Goodness.
Only if we do one every week.
We will.
So there you go. But then also added up how many episodes we'd have to do to cover the new era, and that would be around 78 or something, I think it was. 78 episodes to cover the new
era. We've done the new era already.
I know. Trouble.
We're carrying on.
Yes, I know. It could be quite painful in some
instances. It'll be in context, though, of finishing up the...
Yeah.
We are doing this.
Are we? Right then, so Ian can't be on next week, but he's rather resigned himself, and he said on air that he will be along the week after. So you've said it now, you can't get out of it.
Please, and Robert, and Kirby, and Mary, and Adam, and me.
Yes, that's what I just said. So,
Before we go?
What?
Anything new on the feed before we go?
Anything new on the feed? Well, we've got Laurie Nick saying, I'll have what he's... I've done that one, sorry. Laurie Nick saying, there's a happy smiley face, obviously thinking about me. Robert Jr. says,
mine.
That's what she said. Ian doing a long story. And then... Lillian Robin said, I'm on TikTok, but not Doctor Who stuff. I know what stuff you're talking about, Lillian.
Lillian, mate.
Oh, yes. Lillian, you bad.
But yeah, I've got some stockings, Lillian. You want to see my stockings? Look at this. This is I've never been seen on the podcast before. There they are. Look,
quality podcasting. There we go. And now I have to wait a good, like,
They are compression stockings. They're basically surgical stockings to keep my varicose veins in place. Not very sexy.
I bought them on the plane.
Oh, no. I suppose I have worn one on the flight before, to be fair. Well. But anyway, I need a wee-wee. So I'm now going to make the excuse to end the show. And I'd like to thank you all for coming on the show and thank everybody for their emails and feedback. Keep it coming and let's have lots because I like it. We never used to get a lot of feedback, but thankfully now we're getting a bit more of a satisfactory amount. But you can't ever get enough feedback, especially when it's positive stuff about me. So until next time, Vengeance and Vengeance, thank you for listening and taking part and watching the show. Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Scarecrow.
Well done. Tasty. Excellent. Very tasty.
That's what she said.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.